Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning, taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. We are presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Property managers, if you manage it, they maintain it. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. So that's coming up here in about an hour. We have the Rob Rant a little bit later this hour on the program as well. So taking your thoughts on that front. It is minicamp week for the Tennessee Titans, so they will be in action on the minicamp front later this week. And then after that, it's the break in the offseason, and then training camp right around the corner at the end of next month. So it'll be here before you know it. We'll get into some Titans minicamp stuff a little bit later in this hour. Joe, looking at the NFL season coming up in 2026, it's a very interesting year to me on paper. We've seen the Rams load up with the Myles Garrett trade, and they were already a pretty darn good team anyway. You've got the fascination of Kansas City and exactly what they're going to be after a disappointing year last year of, all right, well, number one, is Mahomes healthy? Number two, if he is, how good are they? Are they just going to rebound, or are they a team that's still in transition? You know, maybe L'Jarius Sneed puts them back over the top in Kansas City this year. We'll see. And then there are some of your typical storylines of, all right, well, is this the year for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens? Or is this the year for Josh Allen in Buffalo? Or does, like, the insane collection of talent that they got on the offensive side of the ball in Cincinnati result in, I don't know, them making the playoffs again at some point? There's a lot that you could go through and kind of sort through this year in the NFL. But, Joe, looking at it on paper heading into 2026, what are some storylines, some teams, maybe some players that you look at and say, yeah, either that team or that group of players got a whole lot of pressure on them heading into this season in 2026?
Yeah, when you ask this question, there are a lot. You hit on a lot of them there, for sure. But, I mean, Allen, Jackson, you know, and certainly you're talking coaching changes now.
Allen,
right?
Jackson, good country music artist.
Yeah, there you go. Both of those guys, new coaches, and, you know, we're waiting for them. They're great players. They're top-tier quarterbacks, but can they be champions? You hit on the Bengals. I mean, I think it's a big one. I think the Texans and C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud, there's a lot of pressure on C.J. Stroud this year. I don't think there's any question about it with the Texans. You know, I continue. I mean, Justin Herbert, we continue to consider him a great player, or some people do. He's a very good player. He's a very talented player. They had injuries last year, but okay. Like, can you and the Harbster – are you guys going to take it to a new level, or is this just going to be like a pretty good team year in and year out? Certainly the Rams, I mean, they're an obvious one. But, I mean, you talk about pressure. I mean, you can't bypass New England, right, and just everything going on there. You make the A.J. Brown trade. You're coming off the Super Bowl. You know, the coach, everything's cooled down on the scandal front, but it's there. It's ready to percolate. For sure, when anything goes bad this year, I mean, I think there's just a lot of pressure on them. They have a way tougher schedule, and it's just that obviously it's going to be a fascinating year. But then you flip around the other side of the A.J. Brown trade, and I look at Jalen Hurts, and I think he's one of the guys under the most pressure, under the most microscope this year. Okay, the divorce happened, all that stuff is over. They've sort of replenished his receiving core, but what does that mean for him and for them? I feel like a lot of this is in the AFC, you know, other than, you know, of course, the Rams, I just mentioned the Eagles. I would also, you know, I mean, I look at even like the Bears, I think, would be a team. You know, was that a one-year wonder type thing with Caleb Williams? Obviously, I think he answered a lot of questions last year, but there's still the matter of, like, okay, is this a number one overall pick going to be a great, great player situation, or still that inconsistency that sort of limits you?
I think Josh Allen is at the top of this list because you've seen so much regular season success, and you've seen, especially like last year, the picture opened up for you. You didn't have Mahomes in Kansas City to deal with in the playoffs. You didn't have Baltimore to deal with, and you still go on the road to Denver. And while you made some big plays in that game, I think Allen threw for 3 touchdowns in that game. There are 2 interceptions that you have. He had a couple of missed throws that, had you made them, you know, who knows how the game turns out there. And you lose in overtime on the road to Denver in a season where, it was there for you. It was there for the taking. And he's 30, right? And not that Josh Allen still doesn't have several more years of high-level football in him, but he is 30. And I do think we're starting to get to, not just with him, and you can throw Lamar into this discussion too, but I think with Allen, you're starting to get to, all right, is this ever going to happen? Like, is this going to happen where you break all the way through, knock down the door, and win the championship? I think everybody agrees that he's good enough to do it. He's had performances in the playoff in the past that have been good enough to do it. And whatever, you know, whatever circumstance you want to throw out there, the Kansas City game from a few years ago is crazy, where he plays about as well as you can play, and then you leave Kansas City 13 seconds on the clock, and apparently that was enough. So, we understand the history there, but he is 30 years old. The door totally opened up for him last year. They still couldn't get it done. And if you go through another year of them not at least getting there and getting to the Super Bowl, that to me, if you're a Buffalo fan, you start to look around and you just say, all right, like, is this ever going to happen if they don't do it this year?
Like, I assume Buffalo fans are all in on him, even though, like you said, he did, he has some culpability for last year. But I assume they're all in on him. At some point, I guess you just throw up your hands and say, we must be cursed. He's just the next Jim Kelly.
They've changed the coach. So you've got a new coach heading into this. Kind of.
Yeah.
He was there, but kind of.
Right. But, yeah. But it's like how many Dan Marinos are there where it's like everyone would agree that this is an all-time great quarterback? I think anybody would. I don't know where people – like, where would Marino be on the list now? He falls down the list as time goes on because there's more people. But Marino is one of those examples of a guy everybody would – probably agree was a great quarterback, didn't win it all. He only played in 1 Super Bowl. This era could have multiple Marinos. Like, if Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, never win a championship, because you're right, with Josh Allen, it was not his fault. He's standing there on the sideline at Kansas City and watching something unbelievable unfold. And Lamar Jackson in Buffalo last year, does an incredible game duel between those two, and he does everything you need to do, and Mark Andrews drops a freaking ball. But both of them to me are where the clock is ticking, and I think they're clear, they are great players, they're Hall of Fame level quarterbacks, I think, right?
Yes, for
but
sure.
They may never win a title. How many are there like that? I don't know that many generally agreed upon, great quarterbacks that were like the very top of the list during their era who didn't win at least 1 championship. There aren't many.
There's not many. And the other part of that is, it's obviously Mahomes and the Chiefs have been the main thing that's been in the way of those guys. But now you start to look behind you and you're like, okay, well, Drake May just got to the Super Bowl. We talked about it with Charles last week. That 2024 class, save for, McCarthy and Penix, you're looking at it and you're saying, geez, okay. Some of those guys are pretty good. You got Bo Nix in Denver. And Bo Nix, if you watch Bo Nix play, you're not always blown away by it. But, the fact is he's come in there and he's won a lot of games. So you've got Bo Nix, you've got Drake May, and, hopefully if you're a Titans fan, you're hoping by the end of this next season or the season after that, you could throw Cam Ward into that mix. That's why I'm saying, Allen's about to be 30, and those guys behind him aren't really going anywhere. So it feels like with Kansas City getting a little bit older, we'll see what their response kind of looks like this year. But they don't feel like this immovable threat that they've been over the last, 5, 6 years. And if you can't take advantage of that, if you're Buffalo or if you're Baltimore, or even throw Burrow in there. I mean, at least Burrow has been to a Super Bowl, and those other two guys we've talked about haven't been. But, I mean, it's been, on the whole, I think really disappointing if you're a Bengals fan in the aftermath of that. It was, I mean, number one, the guy can't stay healthy, and number two, when he is healthy, they've either got an absolute sieve of a defense out there and can't stop anybody, or, you know, that you run into Baltimore at the wrong time or whatever it is, they haven't been able to replicate getting back to that point. So I think there's all sorts of storylines from the quarterback front in the AFC that are pretty interesting on that front. But I started with Allen. Like, to me, this just feels like a massive year for Josh Allen.
Yeah, no doubt. And if you want to take this to more like coaches, I mean, you just hit on, I mean, Zach Taylor's got to be.
Yeah.
Got to be right around the top of the list of the bleep or get off the pot year, right?
Well, and I would say, like, you know, the Rams, people are going to point to and be like, okay, well, it's like a super team. You guys are loading up. There's pressure there, and there is. Well, like, at least like the Rams, most of the people on that team, at least like the chief guy, like Stafford has won not that long ago. McVay has won not that long ago. And I know there's new people in there now. They've got Puka Nacua, and you just brought in Myles Garrett. There's pressure there. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, they won the Super Bowl 5 years ago. So it's not like they're going through some long drought here or anything.
Right. It's just they're the team that we're all – they have the pressure of – that's a, you know, probably the best kind of pressure. Not the, like, are you ever going to do it, but just like, okay, you have the team to do it.
Yeah.
So go do it. Most just about every other city would sign up for that right now.
A lot of your thoughts to get to on this front, 615-737-1025. Is our phone number. Teams, players around the NFL that you think have the most pressure on them heading into 2026. More coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Throwing it out there, who's got the most pressure on them heading into the 2026 NFL season? Herbert Kentucky says this, Joe. Says it's a dumb question. 31 teams in the NFL have pressure to get better. One team has the pressure to stay on top. I guess technically that's true. I would say that layers and tiers to that. You know, I don't know that anybody's expecting the Vegas Raiders to go out there this year and win the Super Bowl, or the Arizona Cardinals, who have very few options as a viable quarterback right now, a first-year head coach. Like, I think there are different levels to all this, would be my point.
Yes, the most. The most would be teams with more than others, which does exist.
That does exist.
It is. Now, granted, there are some Detroit Lions fans who probably think that their team still has the window open to win a championship. So they might say that they have a lot of pressure, but I just want them to know.
I was going to bring them up.
Disappointed.
I was going to bring them up. Like that. To me, there are teams right now that I think you wonder – are you in your window still? Have you missed your window? Like the 49ers or another team I'd throw in there? Like, you know, it feels like we have that conversation with them every year of, all right, you know, there's been a lot of success that they've had under Kyle Shanahan. They had a ton of injuries last year. Brock Purdy, when he played pretty well for San Francisco last year. But now they've lost Robert Saleh. They've lost Gus Bradley. Like, they've got some changes that they've made to their personnel. I mean, Brandon Ayuk's out of the building, and based on some of the things he's talking about, probably good that he's out of the building. So, like, it's a different vibe, a different era there in San Francisco, but, like, I'd put them in there. I mean, Ed's asking about the Packers. Like, the Packers, I think, got a lot of pressure. They've got a Micah Parsons trade that they did last year, and they just extended their coach. I think there's a ton of pressure on the Packers heading into this year. There's a lot of teams I think that would fall into that category of, are you in your window to win? And if you think you are, how can you capitalize on it this year?
Yeah. Yeah, with the Packers, like you said, the Micah deal, that to me necessitates a real run real soon. And it's nobody's fault when somebody gets hurt, but that's a real thing. Yeah, the Lions are – The difference between those two is that the Packers have a young, still, to me, like, franchise quarterback. And I think Goff has proven to be, you know, a really good quarterback. I mean, he was actually great last year with bad circumstances, which is, you know, he's had great circumstances. He kind of carried them with even with a huge step back up front. So they tried to, they tried to refurbish that line, so we'll see. But I just don't see them quite being, I mean, they're going to be a good team, but I just don't see them quite being up to that level. It just seems like, really, it seems like in the NFC, so I guess this is where, like, you do have a lot of pressure. It's just, I mean, the Rams and the Seahawks, I mean, like, everybody's just forgetting about them. I wouldn't put them under a high-pressure situation because they just won it all. But certainly they are, they're a team you expect to be right there, and it kind of feels like maybe the NFC is like those two and then a whole bunch of we'll see. Like, the Eagles roster still looks really good, but I don't know. I mean, look, like it or not, people may be like, oh, whew, got AJ out of here. Look at his production and what he meant to them. I mean, you don't just snap your fingers and replace that.
Jacob on the YouTube chat says, Denver's got a good team. I'm not sold on Bo Nix being the answer there. I think this year will be a big find-out year with him. I mean, I remember last year, Joe, I watched Bo Nix play complete games like four times and saw four completely different things. Like, he played against the Titans, and they won the game against the Titans, but I was like, man, this guy's not good. Like, he was not good in that game. I watched him play against the Packers, and he looked like an all-pro out there. I was like, good Lord, who is this? I mean, you watch him play in the Buffalo game in the playoffs, and he made some huge plays down the stretch in that game, and then he gets hurt, obviously. And they just have no shot heading into the AFC title game. But I don't know that I don't know that the consistency is there yet with Bo Nix, but at his top level, he's pretty good.
Yeah, look, I was a complete doubter / hater with him coming out of college. It's like we saw that, we've seen this guy through college. Look, Oregon did a great job of giving him the answers, but, this is like a college system QB. And then it's like, okay, so he's also an NFL system QB because he has Sean Payton. But at some point, you have to give the guy credit. He's way better than I thought he'd be. I don't know where it goes from here. Does it level off a little bit? I guess I'd probably think so because I still have some, quite a bit of doubt there, but he has answered a lot of questions. You have to give him his credit for what he's done so far.
Where's Duval fall on this? Everybody thinks they've had the worst draft of all time. So they just won the division last year, 13-4. I mean, if they're good again, I think we might have to admit that their super genius GM might actually be good at this. I'm hoping they fall flat on their face, but I mean, we'll see what nobody's going to think of Jacksonville in this conversation because you've got, Trevor Lawrence, Liam Cohen, and frankly, it's Jacksonville, so how many people really care? But I'm interested to see how good they are this year because if they're bad, we can have a lot of fun with this general manager and the draft they just had.
I mean, it's amazing. Like, their points differential was like fourth in the league last year. I understand they play in the AFC South, but yeah, you totally forget that they went 13-4. They won their last eight games. I don't think there's any question Liam Cohen can coach. Trevor Lawrence took a step. But yeah, I don't think of them. I think of the Texans as the team under pressure.
Yeah.
Because of the court. It just, the Texans, because the Texans also, they have a defense that's like, okay, this is a defense you can put into any big NFL game and be like, yeah, deal with these guys.
Well, they've got a quarterback decision to make.
And there's that too. But yeah, the Jags are just kind of floating out there.
Hey guys.
Just kind of, just they're a really, really interesting team. And if they do take a huge step back this year, and again, you have to see like what does it look like, what does this particular draft yield? Is it a whole bunch of like, oh my God, they did make all these mistakes? It could flip real fast on the kid,
It could.
They could flip real fast on him, but. Yeah, they are totally like the forgotten team.
They are.
Duval.
From last year.
No respect for the Duval. Jags. I know somebody coming up at 8 o'clock, they'll have great respect for the Jags. That is Corey Curtis. But I think he has billboards in Jacksonville of fans that hate him. It's like, wow, this guy from Nashville is a real jerk.
Yeah, they need to know more about Corey Curtis. We need to start a campaign so that they really, we could maybe string together some Corey Curtis, insults about them and like get him on some Insta reels or whatever the kids do, get a real hate campaign going for Corey.
I mean, in all seriousness, on Jacksonville, if you're talking non-quarterback, I'd have to go around the league. I'm sure you can find some better examples, But I bet it's not too far down the list of like non-quarterbacks that you need to see play really well this year. Travis Hunter's got to be up there, given what they gave up to go get him, what their thought process was behind it, and how he basically got almost nothing out of him last year, and it didn't matter. He ended up 13-4 anyway, but I would have to think that when you start stacking up the non-quarterbacks around the league that you got to start to see something from, Travis Hunter in year two would be near the top of that list.
And again, that's the GM, right? Too. That's because so if you again, we'll see what happens with this draft. Maybe he's a genius. But if it sort of even just plays out like, yeah, he might have overreached with some of these, and the guy he sold the farm to doesn't have a huge breakthrough season this year. I mean, it's starting to look rough. It's like, man, look, like, okay, yeah, like they're pretty good. Like their coaching is pretty good. Their quarterback, they have some good pieces in place. They had a good team. I mean, it's not like he came in and, you know, most of the team that performed well last year was in place, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden it's going to look like, so actually this guy is totally mismanaging things. And think about where they could be had they not made the Travis Hunter deal. I agree. Of non-quarterbacks, I don't know that there's a, obviously, there's a microscope on, you know, an AJ in New England,
sure,
and things like that. But Travis Hunter's got to be real high on the list.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into the Titans with mandatory minicamp coming up this week. Take more of your thoughts. Our football offseason coverage brought to you by Tennessee Brew Works. Locally brewed, community driven, Tennessee Brew Works, the official craft beer of football offseason coverage here on ESPN 1025 The Game. We'll have more coming up next here on Robbie and Rex Road. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up here in just a few minutes. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at 102.5 The Game for live shows and exclusive content. You can join our one-day award-winning YouTube chat. I don't know what it's going to win an award for, but it'll be something in the not-too-distant future. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Joe, it is a mandatory minicamp week for the Tennessee Titans. So you've got minicamp coming up for a couple of days, and then after that, they're out of here. And the next thing on the agenda will be training camp after that. Cameron on the text line did point out earlier, says, minicamp? No. Nothing actually happening at the Titans facilities because it's June. None of it actually happened unless it's good, and then it's rock solid 100% proof that a player is a star. So we got to keep our eye on that the rest of this week, Joe. Maybe Cam Ward and OTAs is just kind of laying the groundwork where he's going to go out there in minicamp and just light it up. We'll see.
It'd be nice to just not have a day of Cam Ward being bad and everybody screaming about what it means. But yes, that is funny. It's like Cam Ward stuff means nothing. Carnell Tate good stuff. Take it to the bank, baby.
Here he comes.
You got to balance those two. I saw Kaharski wrote something about that. Glad he occupied his time with something he knows a damn thing about rather than the NBA.
Hey, that may be the nicest thing you've said about Paul Kaharski and his coverage ever. He does know what he's talking about on the football front.
I fully respect his coverage. He just needs to, like, stay in his lane.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, like, one of my buddies was asking me this over the weekend. He's like, it's mini camp. Like, after OTAs, do you get any, like, noticeably different excited for minicamp being there? And I was like, no, I do not. I mean, if it's OTAs, minicamp, I will be excited for about, I don't know, 3 days when training camp gets here, Joe. And then it very quickly gets to, all right, let's get to the regular season. See how quickly we can get there.
Well, you'll get to the first preseason game. It's like, okay, we'll at least get to see something, and I guess, you know, at least get to see the backup quarterbacks a little bit, you know, maybe some of these skill guys, maybe some of these young guys get a little bit of time, and then you get through a few minutes of that game and you're like, okay, that'll do it, thank you. But hey, no other sport even bothers to like try to get you interested in anything until they actually play games that count. So
that's true.
Different world.
It's a different world for sure. I mean, if you're looking at stuff on the defensive side of the ball to get excited about, I mean, I am going to be interested to see how quickly into the regular season do these guys mesh together. And if if things work out reasonably well, because I think we know heading into a season, if you're expecting like everything on your checklist on either side of the ball to work out exactly how you hoped, you're probably setting yourself up for failure at that point if you're a fan. But if the Titans have a reasonable hit rate on the defensive side of the ball with all the changes that they've made, the people they've brought in, obviously the coach that's now in charge of that. Like, I do think an interesting question is, like, how good are they? How good is that side of the ball? I think we all can see that offensively, you know, you got a really young quarterback. You've got an exciting player in Carnell Tate, but you're talking about a rookie heading into all this. So I think there's going to be a natural grace period that people have for the offense and the expectation of those two guys in particular. How much better do they get as the season goes? On defense, I mean, you brought in a veteran established player in Franklin Myers, some veteran established players in Flott and Taylor on the corner front. You've switched things up with the way you're going to be calling things with Saleh coming in. You've got a new defensive scheme, new defensive system. You do have young guys at very important spots on the edge that I think people are interested to see. But there's a lot of experience on the defensive side of the ball. So I think that's a huge question is if you get a reasonable hit rate on the defensive side of the ball with some of these acquisitions you've made, how good are you on defense?
Yeah. I expect pretty good. I expect they will have a decent hit rate. You can never count on across the board, but I expect them to stop the run. I expect them to stop the run, and I expect them to be able to figure out pressure and affecting the opposing quarterback at a pretty high level. I think the secondary still could be vulnerable. You know, that's going to be interesting. If you're going to hit rate it back there too, I think you could have a pretty good defense. I'm going to be disappointed this year if they don't have at least a solid middle of the pack overall NFL defense. Now, it's harder to have that if your offense is terrible. So these two sides work hand in hand. Like, you have to be able to like help the defense and like sustain drives and not keep going three and out and putting them back on the field and things like that. But I think the prospects look awfully good over there to at least, again, be solid and in a lot of games hold the score down to where you're in a close game even if your offense is struggling.
I mean, how good is the Alante Taylor-Cordell Flott combo? I don't know. I mean, I think it's got a chance to be pretty good. You know, there's a lot that goes into that, obviously. I mean, if they've got no pressure on the quarterback coming off the edge, yeah, and then it
that's
doesn't really
my
matter
answer
how good
yeah
they are. If you get reasonable pressure and then you factor in what you think you're going to get from Simmons and Franklin Myers up the middle, that's where I think this defense can be transformed, not to steal a Vrabelism, but from good to great. Like, if you get reasonable pressure on the edge, and I think the strength of the football team, much less the defense, is Franklin Myers and Simmons up the middle there, then I think that's going to help Flott and Taylor out a lot on that front.
I think as long as you're not asking them to be locked down top of the league corners who have to hold their coverage for 4 or 5 seconds at a time, then I think they're going to be fine. Yeah, if you give them pressure, and I think they're solid. You know, you should be fine out there. Can they stay healthy? If you tell me those guys are going to be out there all year, that's pretty good. Outcome, I think, for everything, because I do think the pressure, you know, again, the pressure is, yes, I agree, the strength is up the middle. There is definitely a big question about like how many guys on the edge are actually going to be able to just beat their guy consistently and get home, or at least affect the quarterback. There's a lot of unknowns on the edge, and even including Robinson and you know what he's going to look like here a year after the injury.
Jermaine Johnson, yeah. I mean, for sure.
Yeah. Yes. Now I'm channeling Kaharsky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jermaine Robinson, Jermaine Johnson. Sure. Sure.
Well, yeah.
Denard Walker, Denard Wilson.
It's a lot of Denard Walkers that were thrown in there. Yeah. He is a huge question here, because if he's 7.5, 8 sack guy, which is what he was before the injury, then that's a pretty big difference to 3 sacks that he was last year. And I know it's not just as simple as the sack part of it, but if he's fully healthy and ready to go, I mean, you're going to need all the help you can get on the edge out there. I just think if you look at their defense, if they can get decent pressure on the quarterback from the edge group, I think they've got a chance to be pretty good. I mean, we'll see on the Anthony Hill Jr. front, but I'm also like, I know nobody talks about it, nobody cares about it that much anymore because it's just the nature of the position. But like, how much does it matter if Cedric Gray's really good and they found a linebacker in Anthony Hill Jr. that, you know, it becomes clear halfway through the season that's a pretty good pick? Well, how much does that matter, having a pretty good linebacking duo? And then, you know, Cody Barton making a lot of money, but it's not, like I said, it's not bad to have depth with Cody Barton in there. So, I mean, nobody's going to look at that and start listing off the reasons why the Titans defense is going to be good. It's like, wow, linebacker play. But it'd be nice to have if Anthony Hill comes in at the age of 21 and it can make an immediate impact.
Insert average linebacker play into the defenses that got Robert Saleh two head coaching jobs and tell me if he has those jobs.
Probably not.
I'm going to say no. I mean, like those guys, especially Warner. I mean, that was a tremendous, tremendous impact. No, it makes such a difference. And no, I think it's exciting. You don't want to put too much on the rookie. But I think Gray, you think about what we thought of him as a rookie when there was injury, but also like questions about, gosh, he can't really get on the field. And, you know, they don't seem to really be too high on him. And then what you saw last year, what if he takes another step from that? And with Saleh and his system, clearly knowing how to, you know, get the most out of linebackers, get guys at that position play at a high level. Yeah, that could be a big part of this whole picture.
Let's head back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Steve in Franklin to the program. Steve, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, guys. So I want to see if you all had a gut feeling about what happens with Will Levis, whether the preseason, the three preseason games determine his fate with the Titans, or he stays no matter what, or does he go no matter what? And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Steve. I mean, Joe, if you're forcing me to like nail down a prediction for him, my guess is it goes pretty similarly to the Malik Willis route, where he plays in the preseason. There's some sort of like quarterback injury that happens around the league or something, and somebody gets Will Levis for like a seventh round pick. That's my guess.
Yeah, I think that's. I think it just makes sense to, you know, give him a showcase. It's probably, again, not ideal for him, even though, again, it's different coaches and all that. But just a, you know, fresh start's probably preferred if you're a guy in his position, just a total fresh start. But I think he'll get an opportunity in these preseason games. And, yeah, we'll see, like, if they can even get anything, if anybody wants to trade anything for him. I still think he's a decent candidate for you know, a guy who – In a couple of years could be a QB2 for someone, get an opportunity, look good, and kind of rejuvenate his career. But he's got a lot to prove to get to that point. Obviously, this league now is on alert for guys like that. You would think that there'd be some GMs around the league who would look at him and say, I mean, he could be a guy, right? Like, you look at everything, it was a bad situation. He was bad. He was doing weird stuff in the field. But he could be a guy at some point. I would think that there'd be a GM out there who'd be willing to part with a real low pick just to find out at some point.
We will have the Rob Rant coming up next. Corey Curtis from News 2 at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
Where are the fans? There's no fans here. Where are they?
Phil Rivers, I know you have 93 kids.
Dadgummit!
Well, at least he didn't say he hated his father.
Why does it take me 14 minutes to pee?
Now we're getting into Butch Jones territory. What was the color?
Somebody run over the fraternity. Throw a freaking brick through their window.
Did you go to the bathroom all day, Paul?
Did I talk to Michael?
Micah. You're out of your mind! You're out of your mind! It is time for the Rob Rant, brought to you by Rapid Response Generators. Power when it matters most, and served by the Wine Cellar in Hendersonville. We got Corey Curtis coming up at 8 o'clock here on the program. Joe, if I had to line up every person in our nation there are a probably only a select few that are more qualified to have this conversation I'm about to engage in than you are. And I'm very excited to have this conversation with you on the program. Let me say on the front end that I realize that what I'm about to rant about, and it's actually part of my rant, the general population probably doesn't care about all that much. So let me just go ahead and tell you, I recognize that on the front end. But this thought occurred to me the other night, Joe, as I'm watching the NBA Finals, the Knicks wrap up the championship, and pretty quickly into the coverage, the studio goes down there to Stephen A. Smith, who's having a hard time like containing himself with the Knicks winning the championship. And I will freely admit, like, it was hilarious to watch. Like, I somewhat enjoyed it watching Stephen A. Smith out there in the aftermath of his team. I mean, he's like unashamedly a Knicks fan winning the championship. But it did get me thinking. I was like, okay, so here's a guy that basically cut his teeth covering the NBA. Like, he covered the NBA, and that's how he kind of got his start into all this. And, you know, he led a bunch of studio shows, and now he's the face of ESPN and all these things. And I'm watching, like, around, like, just some of the coverage here, all these people in the media that are, like, are Knicks fans that cover the NBA and these things. And it just got me thinking about, you know, coming up in this business, one of the things that was just, like, beaten into me, Joe, in college, as I was talking to other journalists, other things, was objectivity. And it's no secret, my background is in hockey. I've been in the NHL covering the Predators since I was 18 years old. And I grew up a gigantic Predators fan. Like, I was a huge Predators fan. But I knew, or at least I thought I knew, if I was going to get to where I wanted to go in this business, and if I was going to do this professionally, then that had to be almost beaten out of me. So, you know, the first few years I was around, it was like, you have got to detach yourself from this. You've got to focus in on the job, and you have got to worry about the job, not worry about the Nashville Predators. To the point where, not very far into it, you know, by the time I was 20, 21 years old, the attachment was gone. Like, it was more about the job. And now, like, I'll be walking around and, like, the Predators score or something good happens to the Predators. And, like, you know, every now and then I feel happy for some people that I know there. But, like, it doesn't affect me one way or the other. If they win a game, if they lose a game, it's just gone. Like, and I don't know, you know, I don't know how much longer I'll be doing hockey stuff. It could be, you know, another 25 years. But I don't know that I'll ever get that back. Like, I don't know that I'll ever get, like, whenever it's said and done and I'm not covering hockey anymore, I probably will not be anywhere near the Predators fan that I once was, just because of what I've done professionally. And I look around the media landscape today, Joe, and I just don't know that objectivity matters at all anymore, that anybody in the general public really cares about it. I mean, say what you will about, like, the Barstool guys and Portnoy and all those people, but they've kind of, like, made a business model out of it, right? Like, you know, there's that Frank guy that they do that's a huge Mets fan, where people just love watching him and reacting to the Mets losing. Or, like, Portnoy's a Patriots fan and a Michigan fan. When they lose, like, people just love watching their reaction to it. And it just feels like the general public does not care about objectivity with the people covering their teams anymore.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. First of all, I think the way you do it is, I think it's the right way. I think there is a difference in broadcast and writing on this.
I would agree.
Right? Like, obviously at our station, I mean, we have hosts who are openly, more like fan approach, I'd say, than like media approach, or at least some kind of a hybrid of that, which is fine. I think, but if you just go to the writing side of it, I still don't think right? I mean, I think people for the most part are that's just not a thing that you get into, right? Like, you just do the job, whatever it is. You may be covering a team that you grew up a fan of, or you may not be, but either way, like, you have to, like, do the job. I think somewhere along the way, I mean, ESPN somewhere along the way decided, let's start having, like, our on-air talent talk about the teams they love.
Yeah. Like, Greenberg does it all the time with the Jets.
Yeah, and that was probably, I don't know, probably about 10-ish years ago, something like that. So maybe is that a Barstool influence? I don't know. But it seems like that's a huge thing for them now, is like, who is, you know, you're like, your hosts are almost like identified in some cases by like a team they love, like Stephen A. and the Knicks. Whereas I still feel like if you're just doing the, well, I shouldn't say print, because, you know, yeah. But it's the writing side of it. I don't think it's really changed much, right?
Well, like, I don't know. Like, I largely I would agree with you, but I think with the younger generation coming up, and this is going to make me sound like some old pawpaw, and I promise it that I'm not trying to, but like I have seen it more and more with like the younger people that get into hockey, that the objectivity part of it, it's almost like they're not even taught about it anymore. It's like they just show up and it's like, oh, I get to cover the team that I've grown up watching and rooting for all these years. And like the objectivity part of it doesn't even come up in the conversation.
Well, I hope that's not true. That's a real problem if that's true, because like you can't, I mean, look, we have enough. I mean, you can go through any SEC football game in the fall, and if you sit in the right spot in the press box, you're going to see some serious homer stuff from some of these people, okay? But I hope that's not the case. You got to conduct yourself professionally. We'll go back to March. I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but I wrote this column about these kids.
No, we talked about it.
Because I was, yeah. And again, I hate to be like the old man yelling at the cloud, but it's like you can't sit on press row. That's right, it was a rant. You can't sit on press row and like cheer and scream and do chants like defense from press row. Like what are we doing? So maybe you're right. Maybe it's not being taught. I don't understand that at all. Like, if you want to do the job well, to me, it's something that's just going to get in the way of doing the job well, in my opinion.
Well, it's,
okay?
It's even to the point with me, and this is, I think this, again, is just a product of, like, you know, I had certain people that kind of helped mentor me coming up in this, that this was a huge deal to them, and I think it rubbed off on me. But, like, I'll even be watching games now. Like, I'll watch, like, every now and then I'll turn on like an Avalanche game, and not to single out these guys because they're not the only ones. It's rampant in the NHL and in the NBA, all sports. But like, you know, the guys who work for like Altitude, Mark Moser, like they do a great job calling the game, but they're just like, they work for the team. They're like gigantic Avalanche people. So like when like the first call goes against them, it's like, oh, that sucks. This referee's terrible. And it's like, I mean, if you see the guy in Minnesota for the Vikings, the Paul Allen or whatever, like he's insane. Yeah. So, like, I mean, some people love that stuff. It drives me nuts. Like, I just want them calling the game. That's all I want. But I understand, like.
But that's not new.
That's
right?
Not new. Like but yeah, that's how far that it goes back. With me is, like, that drives me nuts, that type of stuff. But, like, it's way beyond even that now. Like, it's just, it's everywhere. And, again, I don't think most people care. And that's, I guess, where I'm coming from for all this.
I mean, in 2005, I covered the Pistons, the home games of the NBA Finals against the Spurs. So I was there when Rasheed Wallace, you know, I'm in the press row. Rasheed Wallace leaves Robert Horry on it, who inbounds the ball to double the guy who catches the ball. So Horry gets it, and I'm sitting there like, eh. But like, I didn't like stand up and start screaming at him. Like, you have to be you have to do it professionally. You know, I've helped out with the Tigers World Series coverage in 2012. I wasn't up there cheering. It's like, yeah, okay, do the job. And I think moving here, I've been able to be more of a fan again because I'm not around that. But if I was up there still, it would be like, you just have to, you know, to me, you have to, at least I think in some forums, you have to maintain the professionalism. Again, I think here we talk about teams we're fans of, right? Which is fine. But man, I hope, I hadn't even thought about that they're not even teaching it anymore. That's actually kind of terrifying thought. Well, we can't have Matt Joneses everywhere, everybody wearing their team's colors head to toe with fan fingers on press row, can we?
No, but the bottom line is, the reality is, there's also money in some of that too, right? Which is why some of these people do it. So, I don't know. It's just an interesting thought exercise I had over the weekend of, it doesn't seem like anybody cares about this anymore at all, other than, I guess, me and you.
Some people are responding that they do care, which is good to hear, that is actually.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll probably bring this back up at some point. Corey Curtis from News 2 with us here on the program. Robbie and Rexrow, 1025 The Game.